Morning. Today's daf in Pesach Mayin Dal. We're starting the seventh parak of the Masechta. As already pointed out, just from a broader scale of the Masechta, there are five prakim dedicated to the Karban Pesach. After having gone through the first four prakim of the Masechta that deal mostly with chametz and matzah, so prakims numbers 5 through 9 deal with the mitzvah of the Karban Pesach. The ninth parak really has to do with Pesach Sheni, but nevertheless, prakims numbers 5, 6, 7, 8. Are dealing with the details regarding the Karban Pesach. The fifth perek just established the basic time in which we're going to be shechting the Karban Pesach and the basic kavanas that one needs in order to shech the Karban Pesach. The sixth perek, which we just completed, so that deals with the intersection of the 14th of Nisan and Shabbos. And the idea that the Karban Pesach is going to be overriding the Shabbos, the Shechitas Karban Pesach, and other activities are going to be overriding the Shabbos, the machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in terms of which activities are not going to be overriding the Karban Pesach. And then we just concluded a really fundamental sugya on Daf's Ayin Beis and Ayin Gimel. We just concluded the sugya of Tov B'Dvar Mitzvah. Here now in the seventh parak, Daf Ayin Dalet here in Pesachim. So we're going to be going back to the details regarding the Karban Pesach, and now we're going to be talking about the roasting of the Karban Pesach. When it comes to all other karbanos of the Torah, so obviously the Avodah, in terms of what is to be done, is for the most part universal. You shech the karban, you mekabel dam, you receive the blood in the bowl, holacha, you walk it over to the mizbech, and zrika. Okay, zrika does differ from karban to karban. Some karbanos have zrika's dam on all four corners of the mizbech, some have it on two of the four corners of the mizbech, and some, like the Karban Pesach, is one of the corners of the mizbech. So in regards to zrikas adam, so there are some differentiations. But for the most part, though, the avoda is more or less the same. And then in terms of what happens to the carbon after you shecht it, so if it's a shlamim, like the Karban Pesach is, so if it's a carbon shlamim, so the vast majority of the animal is going to be given to the owner, consumed by the owner. In fact, by the Karban Pesach, so we already pointed out a strong emphasis on the eating of the Karban Pesach. The whole purpose of bringing the Karban Pesach is so that it would be consumed. And there's a mitzvah to eat Karban Pesach. So most of the animal is going to be given to the owner to be eaten. The imurim, as we already discussed in the previous parak, so that's going to be put up onto the mizbeach, burnt on top of the mizbeach. Good. So that is the story regarding the Karban Pesach. However, something unique and different regarding the Karban Pesach that does not exist by other karbanos, and that is the idea of sli, the idea that the Karban Pesach has to be roasted, meaning the Torah actually details how to prepare the Karban Pesach for eating, and this is not true by any other karban. By any other karban, so the halach is that however you enjoy eating it. If you like it roasted, that's great. If you like it cooked, that's great. And bake it, and you can prepare it in any manner. It doesn't really matter. As long as you're doing it so b'derech hakavod. However, when it comes to the Karban Pesach, the Torah is very clear, meticulously clear, that it must be roasted. There is no other way, that one is to prepare the Karban Pesach. In fact, if one were to cook the Karban Pesach or partially roast the Karban Pesach, so one is violating lavim of the Torah. That is a violation of a negative prohibition of the Torah to either cook or to partially roast the Karban Pesach. So this is a unique halacha that applies to the Karban Pesach. Our Mishnah is going to be detailing the halachas regarding the roasting of the Karban Pesach. And, well, I'll introduce, but let's save the introduction to blood for a little bit later in the daf, because blood is going to be a big part of today's daf. Kates and Solanus, the Pesach, the Mishnah starts off, top of Ayin Dalam Adalef. How is one to roast the Karban Pesach? Mevi'in Shpucho Rimon. So the spit that you're going to use is going to be a wooden spit, and specifically from a pomegranate tree. And what you're going to do is that you're going to stick the spit right through the animal from end to end. It's going to start from the mouth, and it's going to go all the way out to the rear of the animal. And according to Rav Yossi Aglili, as far as the intestines are concerned, so they are going to remain inside. Now, we already pointed out that there are certain parts of the innards that are going to go up onto the Mizbeach. That's the Imurim. They were already removed, and they were already put up onto the Mizbeach. Over here, however, not all the insides are going up onto the Mizbeach. Only portions of the inside are going up onto the Mizbeach, which means that the balance of the innards are going to be in the still with the, together with the Karban Pesach. And so, according to Rav Yosef Galili, they're going to remain inside during the roasting. Now, that sounds reasonable. Rabbi Kiva says no. Rabbi Kiva says that is unreasonable. Rabbi Kiva Amar Kamin Bishul Huzeh. What are you talking about? If you were to leave the insides, the intestines, inside of the animal to be roasted inside the animal, so effectively what you're doing is you're cooking. Meaning, if you will look at the animal itself as basically a pot, a large pot. Now, granted that the animal itself is being roasted, but the insides that are inside the animal, so they are going to be basically viewed as cooking in a pot. And Rabbi Akiva says that if I leave the intestines and all the innards inside the animal for the roasting, so they're actually going to be experiencing cooking, and that obviously would be an issur in the Torah. The Torah says that you're not allowed to cook, but rather you have to roast. So according to Rabbi Akiva, what is the solution for the intestines? So Rabbi Akiva says, Gimin Bishul Uzeh, Elatolin Chutza Lo. So what you're going to do is the following. You're going to take the intestines, you're actually going to take them out of the Karban Pesach prior to the roasting, and what you're going to do is you're going to put them on the spit, and they're going to be sitting on the spit above the head of the animal. And so that way the intestines themselves can experience the roasting process, not the cooking process. Ein solan es pesach lo al shpur ve lo al haskala. In terms of roasting the Karban Pesach, you cannot use any kind of metal spit. It's got to be a wooden spit. It can't be shpud, it can't be askala. Rashi over here uses the word grills for askala, meaning it can't be metal. Amar Rabbi Tzadok Meister Rabbi Gamliel Sharmer Letevi Abdo. And Rabbi Tzadok says that there was an incident with Rabbi Gamliel that said to Tevi, his servant, say, if it's a lanus a pesach al askala. He says, go ahead and roast the Karban Pesach for us on the askala, on the metal grill. Now, obviously, then tomorrow's daf, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, which is that the story contradicts exactly what we just got done saying. We just got done saying that you're not allowed to do it. And meanwhile, the Mishnah brings in a story with Rabbi Gamliel and his famous servant, Tevi, where he told him, yeah, go ahead and roast it on a spit. Good, so the Gemara is going to ask that question tomorrow, so we will see the Gemara's approach to how to understand the flow of the Mishnah. As a point of significant interest, which again, I'm just going to touch on. We're not going to do it with any kind of depth. So go back to yesterday's daf, really 2 days ago, the bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Beis. So remember the back and forth between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Tarfon missed a day in the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Gamliel said to Rabbi Tarfon, where were you? And Rabbi Tarfon said, well, I was doing the Avoda. And that's why I wasn't in the Beis Medrash last night. And Rabbi Gamliel's response, Amr lo, right? I'm just going back to yesterday's daf, right? Amr lo, kol varecha ina ela divrei tema. Right? Rabbi Gamliel says, what avoda are you talking about? V'chi avoda bizman hazeh minayim. So we don't have avoda bizman hazeh. There is no avoda bizman hazeh. Meaning Rabbi Gamliel lived post-Churban Bayis Sheni. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so of course there's no avoda, he didn't know what Rabbi Tarfon was talking about. Now, the Gemara clarified on behalf of Rabbi Tarfon. The Rabbi Tarfon was talking about the eating of Truma, which was done well after the Churban Bayis Sheni. So Rabbi Tarfon describes the eating of the Truma as an avoda. Okay, so what's clear in yesterday's daf, you don't have to remember that long ago, is that Rabbi Gamliel lived after the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so now when you go to our Mishnah, so our Mishnah really becomes the puzzle. Because our Mishnah over here has a machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Glil and Rabbi Akiva, how to go ahead and roast the Karban Pesach, and the Mishnah's discussion of whether or not one is allowed to use a wooden spit or a metal spit. Now, as far as Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef Glil are concerned, so it could very well be that this was talking about during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Or, remember, Rabbi Akiva lived both during and after Churban Beis HaMikdash. So that's only possible. And or, of Rabbi Yosef Glil and Rabbi Kiva, just simply talking about the halacha. Meaning it could be that the Beis HaMikdash is already destroyed, they're just talking about the halacha. But then at the end of the Mishnah, you probably know where I'm going with this, but then at the end of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah tells a story, right, Maisa Shahaya, right, Maisa bring Gamliel Shamar Letevi Avdo. So Rabbi Gamliel tells Tevi, you know what? Go ahead and roast the Karban Pesach on a metal spit. So what is going on over here in the Mishnah? Rabbi Gamliel clearly lived after Churban Bayis Sheni. We established so in yesterday's daf, and now what are they doing? They're offering Karban Pesach after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so just throwing it out there, there are sources that would suggest, that seem to suggest that the Korban Pesach may have been offered even after Churban Bayis Sheni. Okay, again, just touching on the issue. The problem is obvious, meaning once you remember yesterday's daf and once you see today's daf, so the problem is obvious. And then as far as the solutions are concerned, so there's the more conservative approach, there's a slightly more radical approach, but anyway, but certainly a worthwhile endeavor to try to get to the bottom of what Rebbe Gamliel is doing offering Korban Pesach. We start with the Gemara. So the Gemara's question is really simple, right? The Mishnah says that using the spit has to be a wooden spit. Very specific in terms of the Mishnah, it has to be the wood coming off of a pomegranate tree, but it has to be a wooden spit. It can't be a metal spit. And the Gemara wants to know what's wrong with a metal spit. So I did the chamik sasu cham kulo. The kamad be machmas ashpun. V'rachmana amar tzli esh v'lot tzli machmas davar acher. So the Gemara gives the answer, which is that look, metal is a fantastic conductor of heat. And what happens is that if the Korban Pesach now is, if I'm sliding a metal spit through the Korban Pesach and I'm putting it over the fire, so what's going to happen is that the metal rod is going to heat up to the point where now a good part of the Korban Pesach is going to be heated, being cooked by the metal of the metal spit. And that's not what the Torah wants. The Torah wants liesh. The Torah wants the cooking process to be done by the fire and only by the fire. If any part of the Korban Pesach is being heated up by the metal spit, so then that is sli machmas davar acher. That's not roasting over a fire, that's roasting from the actual metal, and that is a violation of sli esh. The Torah says very specifically it has to be roasted by the fire. So you want to use a substance, a material that is not conducting of heat, like wood, and unlike metal, which is a fantastic conductor of heat. Right, go back to the days where you had the campfire and you roasted the marshmallows and you use a wooden stick. One side of the wooden stick is hot and the other side is fine. Okay, good. So that's why you want wood. So the Gemara says, okay, so fine. So we understand wood versus metal. That part we get. But now the Mishnah is more specific. The Mishnah says, shput shel rimon. It has to be the wood of a pomegranate tree. The Gemara wants to understand that a lot better. What is that all about? Venesi shel deko. Why not just bring wood of a palm tree? So I did this like shivei mapik maya v'havikim mevushal. So the Gemara says, well, the wood of the palm tree, so it has got a lot of ridges and grooves in it, and basically there is water collected in those areas. And so what's going to happen is that you put them over the spit, and the water is going to exude from the stick itself, and it's going to be like you're cooking the Korban Pesach. And again, you want no part of cooking; you want it all tzli. It's to be roasted. So the Gemara says, okay, what about the wood of a fig tree? So I did the mechal chomapik maya v'havalekim avushal. So the Gemara says, the wood of the fig tree, it's hollow, and there's a lot of liquid inside of the wood itself of a fig tree, and therefore, again, you bump into the problem of bishul. It's cooking once there's liquid that's involved, right? It's not actual cooking, right? The Gemara's language is very, very specific. It's kim avushal, but still, there's some water that's involved, and it's like cooking. So the Gemara says, "V'naisi shel alon, shel chruv, shel shikma." Gemara says, "Okay, but let's just try it. Let's work our way through the forest. So, an assortment of other trees. I don't know what all of them are, right? Chruv probably is boxer, shikma is sycamore. But anyway, what about all these other types of trees? So, I did this by kitre mapik maya, mapik maya. So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but they're not smooth wood. There are many knots in the branches." And the knots are really collections of water. And once again, water is going to exude while you're roasting it, going to go into the Korban Pesach. And once again, you bump into the problem of bishul. The Gemara says, "Shel rimon nami isbe kitre." The Gemara says, "Have you seen the branches of the pomegranate tree?" Now, my answer is, I think I did, but I don't have a clear memory. But anyway, the Gemara says it also has knots in it. So the Gemara says, "Shia kitre." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but those knots are really smooth." Okay, so the Gemara talks about physical differences that exist between the branches of a pomegranate tree as opposed to any other tree. Or the Gemara says, look, the wood and the branches only get knotted once the tree is older. So let's say you take the branch of a very young tree, so that also would be good. In other words, so there it has no knots in whatsoever. So the Gemara, one more question. Vayika be paskaya, the mapik, I'm sorry, be paskaya. Okay, now obviously what you did is you cut the branch. And so that means to say that there is an open cut on the branch, and isn't there going to be water exuding out of that area? So the Gemara says, the mafik lebe paskaya, levar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what you're going to do is the following. So that's going to be outside the animal, and that's going to be facing the fire. And as Rashi describes over here, so any water that comes out is just simply going to go right into the fire. Right? Rashi, mafik lebe paskaya, levar, chutz. Lefi ha-pesach. The imaf gemaya lo maya le-pesach. So if any water does come out through the cut opening of the branch, it's just simply going to go down into the fire. And so, and it's not going to go back into the carbon pesach. Okay, so an assortment of dilemmas and solutions in terms of why the Mishnah is so super specific about the fact that it has to be wood, not metal, in terms of the spit that you're using to roast the carbon pesach, and why specifically the pomegranate wood as opposed to any other wood. Let's continue in the Gemara Masis and Delo, Karebi Yehuda. Now, you know, our Mishnah is not following Rebbe Yehuda, Ditanya. Gemara quotes the Braisa, Rebbe Yehuda, Omer Kishim, Sheshput Shal Eitz, Eino Nisraf, Kach, Shput Shal Matechas, Eino Martiach. So Rebbe Yehuda says that a spit of wood is not gonna be sarf, it's not gonna burn, and the metal spit also, Eino Martiach, it's not gonna cook it up. So Rebbe Yehuda basically says, look, I'm fine with the spit being made out of wood. I'm fine with the spit being made out of metal. Amrulo, they say to him, Zech hamiksasu cham kulo, v'zech hamiksasu eno cham kulo. And the Chachamim say back to Rebbe Yehuda, no, you have it all wrong. The property of metal is that it's a conductor of heat. The property of wood is that it's not a conductor of heat. And so therefore, when some of the metal gets heated up, all the metal is going to get heated up. And again, the Chachamim, like our Mishnah, that's the problem with cooking with a metal spit, because you're going to end up cooking a good part of the carbon pesach, not based on the heat of the fire, but based on the heat of the metal. And the Torah doesn't want that. As opposed to the wood, where if some of the wood gets heated up, that doesn't mean that all the wood's going to get heated up. Otherwise stated, the wood is not a good conductor of heat, and that's what we want in terms of roasting the carbon pesach. Okay, and it's hard to understand the give and take over here, where Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Metzias. He just feels that in terms of the physical nature of the metal spit, it's basically the same as a wood. It's hard to really understand what the back and forth is, and if they're in fact having a halacha, a machlokas in Metzius. It sounds that way, but it's not a pleasant way to explain a machlokas in the Gemara. Generally, we like explaining machlokas based on svara and not based on Metzius. V'nosein is kara'av. What do you do with the intestines of the Karban Pesach? So as we already saw in our Mishnah, machlok is between Rabbi Yosef Aglili and Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, keep it inside. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, don't you dare. You keep the intestines inside the animal, they're going to cook inside the animal, and you don't want that. You want the whole animal to be roasted. So according to Rabbi Kiva, you take them outside of the animal, and basically you put them on the spit. And here, a short braisa giving us a little bit more detail over here. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel Koreu Toch Toch. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Toch Toch. Now Rashi over here offers a couple of explanations of what Rabbi Shmuel means. But the first explanation of Rashi, Rabbi Shmuel Korei Toch Toch, denos in Lesocho, Svir Le Kishamartichem et Bashlam et Tochon Nishma Kol Rasichasan Toch Toch Kekol Hasir. So the word Toch Toch Anamanapia, it basically is it's the sound that it makes as the intestines are cooking inside of the Karban Pesach. So it bubbles, and the bubbling sound is going to make the sound of a Toch Toch. And so what Rabbi Shmuel says, good, and that's fine. Meaning, Rabbi Shmuel subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, of our Mishnah, that there's no problem whatsoever with the intestines being cooked inside. Now, in terms of Rabbi Akiva's argument, so we don't see, neither in the Mishnah nor in this Braisa, how Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to counter the argument of Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva says it's kimin bishul. What do you mean? That's cooking. And everything has to be roasted. That's why Rabbi Kiva says you take the intestines out. So back on Rabbi Yosef Glili in the Mishnah, and over here in this Braisa that we're right in the middle of with Rabbi Shmuel, so they're both very comfortable with the intestines being inside. And in fact, Rabbi Shmuel says, look, you can listen to the bubbling, and that's fine. It's perfectly fine. So what are they going to do vis-a-vis Rabbi Kiva's argument? It's not clear. But probably what they would tell you is that the Torah says that you have to roast it whole. And roasting it whole means basically as is. Okay. And Rabbi Tarfon Koreo Gedi Mekulas. And Rabbi Tarfon says, now, you know how you're going to roast it? You're going to roast a gedi mekulas. Not the first time this masechta that we heard the expression gedi mekulas. See Rashi right over here. Rashi writes gedi mekulas lashon kover nechoshes. So it's like a copper helmet. And basically, what you're going to do is that. And Rashi goes on to say that you take out the intestines and you're going to put it on the top of the spit. So basically, what it looks like, a little bit of imagination. It basically looks like now that the intestines are going to be like a, almost like a helmet of the goat or the sheep. And so the, so that's why it's called Gedi Mekulas. It looks like he's wearing a helmet. Tana Rabbanan, continuing in the Gemara. Ezu Gedi Mekulas. And I'm sorry. And just to point out that the Machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Tarfon of this Braisa is effectively the machlokas, Rav Yossi Galili, Rabbi Kiva of our Mishnah. Meaning what they're arguing is basically what to do with the intestines. Do I keep it inside? Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Yossi Galili say yes. Do I have to take it out and put it on the spit so it's roasted directly by the fire? So Rabbi Kiva of our Mishnah and Rabbi Tarfon of the Braisa say that's what you have to do. And you can't leave it inside. Tana Rabbanan, continuing now in the Gemara, Ayin Dalam and Aleph, about two-thirds of the way down. Ezu Gedi Mekulas to Asar Lechol Balela Pesach Bezman Hazeh. So give me a description of a Gedi Mekulas that one is not allowed to eat Bezman Hazeh. So nowadays, Rashi reminds us of the Gemara back in the fourth parak of our Masechta. So many have the minog. Today it's ubiquitous. It's almost universal. So many have the minog of not eating roasted meat on the night of Pesach. Reason being is because Rachmanos, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And so without a Beis HaMikdash, so if we were to eat roasted meat, it gives off the appearance that this was a Karm Pesach, the Karm Pesach that was shafted, not with the Beis HaMikdash and Shchut Echutz and et cetera, et cetera. So many have the minhag. Again, nowadays it's nearly universal. In the time of the Mishnah, yesh v'yesh, some have the minhag, some didn't have the minhag, but many had the minhag in the time of the Mishnah where they would not eat roasted meat. And now the Gemara over here, this Bryce is commenting on, well, what kind of roasted meat is going to be usher? And basically the idea is that whatever would have been kosher in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so the minhag would say that because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, therefore that in that way in particular is going to be prohibited. So, Ezu Gedi Mekulas to Asar Lechol B'Leila Pesach B'Zman Hazeh, Kol Shetzalah Kulo Ke'echad. So it has to be roasted in its entirety. Nechtach mi menu aver. If let's say just a limb were cut off, which would have been puzzle for a Karban Pesach, which would have mean that it's kosher without the Beis HaMikdash, or nishlach mi menu aver ein zeh gedi mekulas. Or let's say now right now the havamin of the Gemara is that the piece is cut off and it's cooked. So that is not considered gedi mekulas, and therefore the minhag would not prohibit that kind of meat bezman hazeh. So hashi yeshom nechtach mimenu ever da af agav de kamatile bahadei amar lo nishlak mibaye. The Gemara just wants a little bit more clarification, because right now we think that cutting it off a piece and cooking it would make it okay. Meanwhile, the first part of the brisa says that cutting off a limb in of itself makes it acceptable. Because again, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the entire animal had to be roasted whole. So that means to say that once you remove a limb, so therefore you are not doing it in the proper manner as was done in the Beis HaMikdash. So without the Beis HaMikdash, now it's going to be fine. The minhag doesn't cover that. So the Gemara is just bothered by the fact that if you cut off a piece and you cook it, so that's fine. Well, what do you mean? Even before the cooking, even if you were to roast it but detached, that in of itself would also have been fine as well. So what's this business of cooking? So I'm Rav Shesha Sheshaka ben Mechubar. So Rav Shesha says, well, no, you kept the animal whole and you cooked a limb of the animal. I'm not really sure practically how you're doing that, but doesn't matter. The point is that if one part of the animal is in fact cooked, so since in the time of the Beis HaMikdash that would be possible, so therefore nowadays the minhag not to eat roasted is not gonna be affect. You won't be violating the minhag if you're just cooking a limb of the animal, since it wouldn't have been acceptable in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, good. So basically, what we just covered in the Gemara over here is the idea that if in fact we have a we have this minhag of not eating roasted carbon Pesach bizman hazeh, So one, this minhag is only covering what would have been acceptable or what would have been a kosher way of preparing the Karban Pesach in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. We are towards the bottom of Vayin Dalam and Aleph, and we start now a sugya of Dan. So now is a good time to introduce. The Torah on a number of occasions prohibits the consumption of blood of an animal after the animal is shechted. There are still parts of the animal that are prohibited to eat. So as two but primary examples of parts of the animal that one is not allowed to eat, even though the animal was shechted properly, is going to be the dam and the chalev. So one's not allowed to consume the blood of the animal, and one's not allowed to consume the chalev of the animal. Good, chalev is not up for discussion today. And parenthetically, by the way, there's another part of the animal that also has to be trabered, that also has to be removed, and that's, of course, also the gittin asha. Just, again, another interesting discussion, really interesting discussion, but I'll touch on it, even though we're not discussing it with any depth, and that is the gittin asha of the Karban Pesach. Does that need to be removed prior to the roasting of the Karban Pesach? So, machlokas, Rambam, Raivin, and the Gemara never touches that issue. Right, so it's so interesting. That's such a basic question, not discussed in the Gemara anyway. The Rishonim debate this very issue. The Rambam says you roast it whole, you leave the Gittin Asha in. The Ravid over there says that's no way you're going to do that. Okay, anyway, so but our focus right now is going to be on dam. So the blood has to be removed from an animal before you consume the animal. Now, in terms of dam, so dam is really divided into three different categories. The first category of blood is the blood that comes out at the time of Shechita. This is Dam Shanefesh. This is Dam HaNefesh. Dam HaNefesh is not only Yasser, but has with it also an Issur Karets. Right? If one were to consume such blood, so one would be subject, if one did so intentionally, one would be subject to Karets. Okay? And then after that, there's what's called Dam HaShoses. In other words, blood that comes out, not in that first rush after you shaft it, but basically any blood that drips out after that. So that also is going to be Asur Min HaTorah. And then what you have is what's called Dam Ivarim. So the blood of the limbs, meaning even after you shaft it, so there's still going to be blood that obviously was circulating throughout the animal. And after the Shechita and after that rush of blood that comes out and after the dripping of the blood, so there's still going to be blood that's contained in the Dam Ivarim. So Dam Ivarim, Mutter or Asur. So here we get to a big discussion, which quite frankly, the Gemara does not speak out so clearly in terms of what the status of Dam Evarim is. However, what is clear, the Gemara's in Chulin, and our Gemara certainly assumes that way as well, is that Dam Evarim that is removed, that is Poresh, that is removed from the animal, that too is going to be Usur. And presumably Usur Min HaTorah. However, Dam Evarim She'eino Poresh, that has not been removed, in other words, it's still in its natural state, so it may in fact be mutter. However, every time you cook a limb of an animal and any meat of the animal, so you're going to be moving around blood. So what you want to do is you want to basically extract the blood prior to the cooking or roasting. Now, just a couple more words in terms of introduction before we continue with the Gemara, and that's the following. So how do you remove blood from the limb of an animal? So there are two ways to do so. One is going to be roasting and the other is going to be salting. Roasting it over an open fire. So what the fire is going to do is it's going to draw the blood out. And obviously, once the blood goes into the fire, it's going to get burnt in the fire. So roasting is a means in which one can extract it, or salting it. Putting a heavy amount of salt on the animal. So the salt is going to create a reaction in which basically it too is going to draw out the blood. So roasting or salting. Now, over here, happens to be on today's daf, a lot of halachas regarding blood and blood extraction. Obviously, it has to do with the Karban Pesach, as the Gemara in a moment is about to point out. And there are a lot of details over here. Obviously, in today's daf, we're not going to be able to cover many of the details over here. I'll highlight a couple of points that come up over in the daf in terms of removing blood from a limb. But obviously, in the course of the remaining part of today's daf, we're going to do this really superficially. Okay, so the Gemara starts off as follows: Amar Rabba. So we are towards the bottom of the Amud, about six, seven lines down from the very bottom of the Amud, And we start off with a halach lamaisa, meaning over here, we're not talking about Karban Pesach right now, we're just talking about halach lamaisa regarding blood. Haimu yasa sharei. Okay, so Rabbah offers the following as a psak. Mul yasa is going to be sharia. Okay, it's permitted. So what's permitted and why is it permitted? So let's start with Rashi. So Rashi writes haimu mul yasa. So Rashi gives a French word to describe it. So for those of you French speakers, old French speakers, so you're going to appreciate that the first words of Rashi. Unfortunately, I don't appreciate it. But anyway, so basically, it's a type of stuffed animal, stuffed with other meat. So basically, what we're doing is that we're taking a whatever the case is, we're taking an animal, we're about to roast it, but we're going to be stuffing it with other meat. Okay, in the South, I mean, I know I live in the South, but not really. I live in South Florida. That's not exactly the South, but in the South, it's popular to go ahead and to stuff animals with other animals. So Sharia, it's going to be permitted. So now we know with the what, why? Why is it permitted? So the next Rashi writes Sharia. So ve'afil lo bishlos abasur shenosan l'socho, and even if I did not, now we have an argus of Rashi. Afil lo bishlos abasur, even if I didn't cook the basur. Right on the side, he works with a gear, so it sounds a lot better. Even if I didn't salt the meat that I put inside, so that means to say that I took totally raw meat and I stuffed it inside of the animal. So mutter the afilu malcho kemalichatzli, and even if I just gave it a light dusting of salt, right? Rashi's of the opinion. You're going to see this in Rashi again and again when it comes to roasting and the extraction of blood. Rashi assumes that you have to salt it just a little bit, right? The malichat sli, Rashi describes it as. Okay, Tosus over here, again, it's really long and it's much more detailed. So Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that there's no salting whatsoever required when you're going to roast an animal. But anyway, the point is as follows. The point is that if I'm taking an animal, stuffing it with meat, and the meat is totally raw and was totally unsalted, nevertheless, it's all going to be mutter. And Rashi goes on to describe the iba malicha kol tzarech l'kedera pshita. Well, Rashi says that, look, if I salted the meat prior to putting it into the, meaning salting it, meaning, right, the malicha's kedera, right, we're planning on cooking it. So there you have to salt it, a thorough salting. So if I did that, so then there's nothing to talk about. I don't need a psak. So then we know that salting goes ahead and extracts all the blood. So what we're describing over here is that basically when I'm stuffing my animal before roasting it, so it means that I stuffed it with totally raw meat. So we didn't really fully explain why. So we're going to see, let's go on in the Gemara. So haimul yasa shari. So if I stuff an animal with raw meat and I roast it, I roast the entire thing together, it's going to be mutter. So haimul abai v'hakabala dama. So Abai says, I don't understand. What's going to happen now is that the blood that was in the stuffed meat that's inside of the animal is now going to come out of that, out of its own meat and go into the animal that it's stuffed within. And basically, am I not going to be having a transfer of blood from the interior meat to the exterior meat? So Amalei Kabbalah Kabbalah Kapolta. So Rabbah says, sure. But then what's going to happen is that it's also going to be extracted as well. Meaning that basically what happens is that, yes, there's going to be a blia. There's going to be absorption from the interior meat to the exterior meat. But because you're roasting it, there's also going to be an expunging of that same blood that's going to go out now to the fire and get burnt in the fire. And the principle of Kabbalah Kachpoltom. Okay, so this is Rabbah's now psak in terms of if I were to take meat and stuff it with other meat, and the stuffing meat that I'm using is raw, and even though blood is coming out of it during the roasting process, that's fine. Because it's true that the blood is now going to hit the exterior meat, but it's also true that the blood is just going to continue and get burnt in the fire. This is a psak of Rabbah, and the Gemara now would like to prove that this is in fact the case. Neima misayeh alei. So the Gemara says now, I think we can really support this psak, because no sin is karav is b'neima av l'socham. So look at our Mishnah. Meaning, even though our Mishnah is not dealing so much with the issue of dam, but clearly we can litigate this question based on our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that you're taking the intestines and you're leaving them inside, and you're roasting the entire animal. So my tam alam mishum damin kabbalah kach palto. So the Gemara says, And over here, meaning we're going to now assume that the blood of the intestines are now going to go into the animal, into the goat or sheep, and then from there it's just going to go out into the fire. So isn't that now going to be an excellent proof for Rabbah? So Amri, so they said, meaning in the yeshiva, the Bnei Yeshiva just simply deflected the proof. Amri Shani Alfim came in the Ika Beis Hashchita Dim Mechalchel Meidav Daivei. So he says, no, look, the Mishnah is not really a good source for the Psak of Rabbah. Because consider that you're roasting the animal, but the Beis Hashchita, the cut that you cut in order to check the animal, it's facing downward. And basically everything is draining downward. You basically have an open drain that allows all the blood to flow downward. And so that is not really perfectly comparable to our discussion. Rabbah's discussion is that the meat that is stuffed inside the other animal. And so there really is there's no portal of exit. There's no drainage. And so really what's happening now is that as you're roasting it, the blood now is flowing from that meat into the exterior, into the animal that you stuffed it into. And Rabbah wants to be mechadish kibolo kach poto. Yes, it's going to get absorbed into the exterior meat, but then it's also going to get expunged outbound into the fire. So that's a chiddush, and you can't really use our Mishnah as a proof because our Mishnah is talking about where basically there's an open port, and therefore all the blood is draining out. Name and Messiah, the Gemara says, okay, how about this? Let's take a look at a Mishnah in Chulin. The Mishnah in Chulin says, halev. Now, if you want to eat a heart of an animal, so korah motzi is dama. So the first thing you should do is you should cut it open, you should drain it of its blood, and then go ahead and prepare it, roast it. And lo karo, karo lo achar bishulo mutter. So, and if you don't open it up and you don't remove the blood, so then what you could do is that you can open it up after you cook it. Rashi right now says that we are assuming that the word bishul over here actually means sli, means roasting. Right? They're psukim. Rashi quotes one in Divrei Hayamim that sometimes for the roasting experience, sometimes we use the word bishul. So fine. So right now we assume that the Mishnah in Chulin is talking about the roasting of this, of the heart. So even if I didn't remove the blood, what I can do is that I can roast it and then eat it afterwards. So my time alav mishum darmin and kabbalah kach polta. And so once again, so what's happening over here? So you roasted a heart. You were supposed to remove the blood before you roasted it. You didn't do so. And now you roasted it. And now we're saying that the heart is fine. So presumably the reason why is because kabbalah kach polta. In other words, we're assuming that as you're roasting it, so the blood now is actually entering into the muscle of the heart, right? The actual cardiac muscle. And then from there, it's polite. It goes ahead and it continues to head outbound and it goes into the fire and gets burnt in the fire. And once again, this seems to be a wonderful proof for Rabbah. And the Gemara says, Shani Lev Deshia. So the Gemara says, yeah, but not comparable. We're talking over here about cardiac muscle. The Gemara describes it. Cardiac muscle as being a smoother type of muscle. And so the Gemara says, so the truth of the matter is that we don't even have to assume that we're talking about roasting. Right, Rashi says we're changing the entire havamin of the Gemara. We can with the word bishul in the Mishnah actually means cooking. Now you're cooking a meat within its blood. So what do we normally say? We normally say that that's usur. It's absolutely prohibited. Meaning that's dami varim shaparish. That's absolutely prohibited. However, when it comes to the heart muscle, because it's a smoother muscle, so therefore it does not allow for absorption of the blood, and so therefore it's perfectly mutter. Okay, so basically the Gemara is saying that this Mishnah and Chulim regarding the heart is not a proof at all because the cardiac muscle is just simply a totally different type of muscle, and so therefore not comparable. The Gemara says, "Vaha Rabin Sava Tafle Ayi Barguzla LaRava Amarle Imale Tafle Havle VeEchel." So the Gemara says, okay, but there are a number of scenarios, a number of cases where we find, so Amarayim not bothered by the blood at all. So for example, Ravin Sava, so he made, it's a form of schnitzel. Now it's not fair to really call it schnitzel because he didn't fry it. But anyway, but he breaded. He breaded the it was bird meat, right? Goose, I think. But anyway, he breaded it and he presented it to Rav, and Rav basically said, well, it's a funny comment by Rav, you know, if it's good, If it's really good, so then please give me some and I'll eat it. Anyway, but the point is as follows, is that now, let's consider that there was a heavy dosage of breading that was put around the goose. It wasn't salted. It was put directly over fire. It was roasted over the fire. So isn't the blood now going to go into the breading? And now isn't that breading now going to be also because it's got dam absorbed in it? And once again, this would seem to prove the idea of Kabbalah Kach Polto. Yeah, while it's over the fire, so not only does the breading going to absorb the blood, but it's also going to spit the blood out. It's going to expel into the fire. And so this seems to be a good proof. So the Gemara says, Hahib is Mida Demafer. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about over here, really fine flour. The Gemara describes it as very crumbly. So, various questions of what the correct gears is over here. But anyway, so it really has no absorption power whatsoever. Any blood that goes into it is going to go right through it. Admittedly, I'm not terribly embarrassed. I don't fully understand the Messias over here. The Gemara is going to make a lot of differentiations between different types of flours, right? A finer flour, a coarser flour. Some flours are more absorptive in nature. Okay. I understand the basic point of the Gemara, which is that this kind of flour has no absorption power whatsoever, so it's not going to be a good case study for that which Rabbah taught us. V'ha-Rabbah ikla le-Bei Reish Galusa, the Gemara says, yeah, but there's another episode where Rabbah went to the Bei Reish Galusa, v'tafalei bar ivza, and again, breaded goose. So Amar ilo de-chazisa de-zig kezuza chivra lo-ach le-mine. Now his response is, let me examine that breading. If that breading is not clear, if I see trace amounts of blood in that breading, I'm not eating it. So the Gemara says now, once again, we go back to the Psak of Rabbah that started this whole discussion, because Rabbah introduces us to this idea, Kabbalah Kach Polto, that even when you are roasting something that absorbs blood, but if at the same time if it's directly over the fire, not only is it going to absorb the blood, but it's also the blood's going to expel as well. It absorbs and it expels. So the blood basically goes right through it. So over here, the Gemara is bothered by the fact that if in fact we subscribe to this idea of Kabbalah Kach Polto, so even if the breading looks a little bit red, but at least the Isser, the Dam HaIsser, basically was expelled and whatever remains is just residual, but it doesn't carry with it the Isser. So the Gemara says, Hasan Bechivarsa Desharir. So the Gemara says, no, because over there the breading that was used was Chivarta. All right, Rashi describes it as basically some sort of white flour, kemach nikia, kein shelanu she'enu solos. So it's not fine flour, and so therefore it is more absorptive in nature, and that's why it's going to be more problematic. So v'hilchasa, okay, good. And again, I was just making the admission that I don't fully understand the different types of breadings and the different types of flours. One being less absorptive, the other one being more, but the Gemara over here understands this, and the Gemara clearly makes the distinctions. V'hilchasa. And the Gemara says, and the Psak Halacha is, Dismida bein asmik bein lo asmik shaya, if I'm using this really fine flour as breading, and so there it doesn't matter whether after the roasting of it, you see trace amounts of red, you don't see tinges of red, it's going to be fine. Because once again, the blood basically went right through it. And the Chivarta, and if I'm using a coarser flour, right, the one we just got done describing. So So there you have to actually take a look. And if you see traces amount of red, so it's going to be asr. If you don't see any red, it's going to be mutter. And deshar kamachim. Now there's this whole amount, there's all this flour that exists in between. So there's a spectrum of flour. We had the fine flour, we had the coarse flour, and somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, you have all the other flours. So ismik asalo ismik shari. So there, if it's red, it's asar, and if it's not red, it's going to be a mutter. So So the Gemara gives a number of piskei halacha regarding the various breadings that are used, and it depends on the nature of the flour. And again, just admitting, I don't fully understand, but that's fine. In other words, it's a mitzvah that existed back then. So the Gemara says, as far as the Mol Yosef is concerned, So when you're roasting it in the oven, so if the one who says that it's aser, that is going to be even if there is an exhaust, a drain, a port that drains out the blood, he's still going to say that it's aser. And the one that says that it's mutter, afilu pumala el, even if there is no drain facing downward, still he's going to say it's mutter. V'hilchasa, mulyasa shari afilu pumala el. And the Gemara says is that when you're roasting it, so even if the drain doesn't face downward, even if it faces upward, it's still going to be mutter. Good. The Gemara now is going to touch on three different organs of the animal, in which how do you prepare it in order so that you can eat it and not have to concern yourself with the iser of dam. So the three organs are umse, be'e, mizrake. Umse, a part of the raw piece of meat of the animal. Be'e is the testicles of the animal. Mizrake, some sort of major arteries of the animal. So pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. So there's a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina. Now before the Gemara spells out the machlokas, so the Gemara gives us a parenthetical note. B'chol Torah kula, Rav Acha l'chumra, Ravina l'kula. You know, generally speaking, Rav Acha is the machmir, Ravina is the meikel. And Rashi says it's important for us to notice because sometimes the Gemara lays out a machlokas between the two, and we don't know who said which position. Right? If you're learning the daf long enough, you'll know this happens often. The Gemara says here's the Amoraim, here are the positions. I don't remember who said what. So at least now we have a small rule that'll help us occasionally. And that generally we know that Rav Acha is the machmir and Ravina is the meikel. It'll help us identify who said what. V'ilchasa k'Ravina l'kula, and the halacha is like Ravina in that we're going to be meikel generally. Levar mahanitlas, with exception to these three items that we're about to discuss. The Rav Acha l'kula, Ravina l'chumra, Rav Acha is the meikel, Ravina is the machmir, v'ilchasa k'Rav Acha l'kula, and we're going to go like the more meikel position. Okay, and now. And now that we gave that small little intro, so now we're going to tackle all three of these meats. Umsa de ismek. So now we're talking about a particularly red piece of meat. So chatchel machay afil kader shari. So if you cut it and you salt it, so then and salting over here means heavy dosages of salt in terms of the halachas of malicha. So they again, it's just well beyond the scope of today's daf. They're extensive in terms of the salting process, but the basic idea is. It requires heavy salting in order to extract the blood. So if you want to cook it, so first you have to salt it to extract the blood, and then it's going to be mutter. So now if you're going to put it on the spit, so then it doesn't require any kind of salting. And again, according to Rashi, a light dusting of salt, according to Rabbi Natan, no salt whatsoever. But the idea is that if I'm roasting it, I don't have to do heavy salting. Because what's going to happen is that the blood's just going to flow out. Now, achle agumre. Now, let's say you decide to roast it directly over the coals. Okay? So you're not putting it on a spit over a fire. So it's now directly on the coals. People do this. Right? Not me. But people roast directly on the coals. So over here, pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina charas v'chad sharei. So machlok is between these amorayim in terms of one being mekel, one being machmir. Now we already know that these three are exceptional. And then we know that in these particular three, the Rav Acha is the meikel. So fine. So now we know. Basically, the Gemara gave us the decoder, so that we know that the Chad Shari happens to be in this particular case Rav Acha. Okay, but anyway. So Manda Aser Mitzmat Tamis. So the one that says it's Aser, because when the meat is directly on the coals, so what's happening is that the coals are not drawing the blood, but just the opposite. The coals are basically sealing the blood inside of the meat. And it's like you're searing it. So, uman desharim mishav shayif. And the one that says mutter says no. Even though the meat is not over the coals, even though the meat is directly on the coals, but still the same thing is happening is that the blood is going into the coals and the coals are basically burning the blood. V'hilchasa mishav shayif. And the Gemara says, and that's the correct way to look at it. And again, by the way, it sounds like, right, second time today, it sounds like they're having a halacha in Mitzias, which again is a little bit strange to explain it that way, but that's what it sounds like. Anyway, we're going to do the same thing again for the next two organs, v'chein beid, in terms of the testicles of the animal, right? Not consumed over here in America, right? Other countries, slightly more popular. So, chatchino, machino, v'afilu, kedera, sharyan. So again, if you cut them and salt them, so then you can cook them afterwards, because the salting has extracted all the blood. Talina b'shvud shayin made a dive. If I put it on a spit and roast it directly over a fire, good. So what's going to happen is the blood's going to go, the fire's going to draw out the blood, and that's fine. And achtino agurme pligi ba ravach ravina. And again, if I put it directly over coals, so we know this, we know what's going to happen over here, machlokas. And it's the same machlokas. Not clear why the Gemara can't just simply consolidate and say this for all three, but okay, but the Gemara separates all three. Fine. V'chein mizrake. So the Gemara says, now these major arteries. So if you want to cut them open, salt them, great. That extracts the blood, and therefore I can cook them right afterwards. And again, if I roast them over a fire, so the fire is going to draw out the blood. And after I go, and if I put it directly over the coals, so pligi ba rav achav ravina charasav rechachari mandasav mitzvot samis, uman desharim mishav shayiv vechusam mishav shayiv. So the Gemara says, same thing over here. Machlokas, the halacha is that even directly over the coals, it's going to be mutter. Hay umsa de ismek chalya. If I have the meat where the ismek chalya. Now Rashi over here offers two pshatim of what it means over here. The first pshat of Rashi is that we're talking basically about the juice that comes out when I cut it open. Rashi offers the second pshat, lishnach brina of Rashi, shecholten oso b'chomet la'achert liaso v'damo nischat letocho. That what happens is that I take vinegar, I run vinegar through it after I roasted it, and the vinegar goes ahead and collects the juice from this meat. So hay umsa de ismek chalya. So let's go with Rashi's second shot. Then we're talking about the vinegar. Aser lo ismek chalya shari. So if you see it being red, so then it's going to be aser. And if it does not have a red hue to it, so then it's going to be mutter. Ravina amar filo lo ismek nami chalya aser. Yefshe deles be shriki dama. Now Ravina says even if I don't see red, but nevertheless, so there still is going to be traces amount of blood that runs through the vinegar. Amale marbar amemal ravashi abba migamele gamue. So we in one version, Ravashi says that my father would basically he would drink the vinegar straight, meaning he felt that there was no problem with that vinegar whatsoever. Now you get dam ravashi gufe migamele gamue. In another version, Ravashi himself was the one who had no problem drinking the vinegar straight. He felt that it was perfectly fine. Amale mar bar amemala Ravashi. Abba hai chala de chalid bei chada zimna sulo te'ine chala bei sulo tani chalid bei. Let's say I take vinegar and use it as basically a I'm going to say a marinade, but it's not a marinade, right? The way Rashi describes it, let's see the Rashi inside, right? Chomets de chala bei tzli ha'idna kedei lahotzi damo. So over here, I'm basically, it's a vinegar rinse. Then I'm rinsing the meat prior to roasting it. Right? Rashi earlier in the daf today said that when you are roasting, so it requires a light salting. Rashi over here seems consistent. Rashi over here says, or alternatively, you give it a vinegar rinse prior to roasting it. So, and what the vinegar rinse is going to do is that it's going to prep it for roasting. Rashi requires a certain minimum amount of preparation prior to roasting it. Again, Rabbeinu Tam in today's daf totally disagrees. He feels that there's no prep necessary before roasting. Okay, but anyway, Rashi says that there has to be some prep, and so either a light salting or a vinegar rinse. And what the point of the Gemara is, according to Rashi, is that once I use this vinegar as a rinse for the meat prior to roasting, I cannot recycle and reuse this vinegar. So Maishna Machla Matmid the Chaltin Bay. And the Gemara is bothered because the Gemara says, you know, we have vinegars that are weaker in nature. And meanwhile, they could be used as a prep for the meat. So why can't I use recycled vinegar? If it's a strong vinegar and I used it once, so why can't I just reuse it again? Is it any worse than using, let's say, a milder vinegar? So the Gemara says, yeah. Hasam ise likiyue de pere be'ene, ha chalaisa likiyue de pere be'ene. And the Gemara describes over here what seems to be basically the acidic nature of vinegar, in that once I use it one time, so basically you've exhausted its acidic power. And so therefore, even if it started off as a stronger vinegar, But once I use it as a rinse one time for the meat, so all of its strength now has been depleted, and that's why I cannot reuse it again. So that's the last halacha of the day regarding a vinegar rinse. Again, everything we covered over here today, really just scratching the surface of the halachas of extraction of blood. Very halach lamaisa, but we just got the basics down. Okay, let's recap our daf today. We start off today with the roasting of the Karban Pesach, something that is unusual that applies to the Karban Pesach. No other karbanos where the Torah tells us specifically how it is to be prepared, and that is through roasting and only through roasting. And therefore, the spit has to be made out of wood, and specifically that of pomegranate wood. Machlok is between Rav Yosi Aglili and Rabbi Kiva in our Mishnah in terms of what we do with the intestines. Do we keep them inside? That's Rav Yosi Aglili, or are they to be removed and roasted separately on the spit outside of the animal? Shitas Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah says very clearly you cannot use a metal spit, but then the Gemara taught us a story that Rabbi Gamliel used the metal spit. Beginning of tomorrow's shiur, we're going to go over the story going against exactly what we learned in the Mishnah. Why can't it be metal? So the Gemara's explanation is that metal is a conductor of heat, and therefore what's going to end up happening is that the animal is going to be cooked by the metal, not by the fire. Why specifically pomegranate wood? So the Gemara says it's just simply the best wood. It does not have collected water inside of the wood, and so therefore there's not going to be any problem of bishul whatsoever. On Ein Dalam and Aleph, more than halfway down, the Gemara brought down a brisa, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Tarfon, again reiterating the machlokus of what should be done with the intestines. Kept inside, Rabbi Shmuel, or removed and put on the spit above the head of the animal, Shitas Rabbi Tarfon. And that is the term of Gedi Makulas. Looks like the visualization gives off the impression that it's like wearing a helmet. The Bismanena, we don't have roasted meat, and the minag is not to have roasted meat. That would have been acceptable in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, if a limb is removed, that would be fine. Or if, let's say, a limb was cooked, that would be fine. Okay, and then, second half of today's daf, all about this idea of blood being usur, and what is a successful way of extracting the blood. And really, a good part of the second half of today's daf started with the psak of Rabbah. Rabbah says that if I have stuffed meat, where I take raw meat and put it inside another animal, and roast the whole thing together, it's going to be fine. And even though the blood from the interior meat is going to now go into the exterior meat, but it's going to continue to expel. Kibolo kach polto, that's the idea over here, that's Rabbah. The Gemara tried to bring in support for Rabbah. The Gemara did not bring conclusive proof that this psak of Rabbah is in fact supported by any Mishnah or by any Braisa. The Gemara talked about meat that was breaded and then roasted. And again, the idea of the blood going through the breading, and is that going to be a problem? And the Gemara was extraordinarily detailed in terms of the type of flour that's used for the breading, some being more absorbent than others. The Gemara then went on to describe that when you have either really raw red meat or testicles or major arteries, so how are they to be prepared, ensuring that the blood has been removed? So the Gemara talked about either salting it or roasting it or putting it directly over the colts. Where there's a machlokus, and in all three of those cases, by salting it, that extracts the blood, by roasting it, that extracts the blood, and even by putting it directly on coals, that's also going to extract the blood as well. Finally, two other halachas that we describe, and that is vinegar that is run through the roasted meat. So is that vinegar going to be acceptable to drink? Machlokus amongst the Amoraim, whether it is or it isn't. And finally, the way Rashi describes the last part of today's daf, the pre-roasting rinse that you do with the vinegar, you can't recycle that vinegar, you cannot use that vinegar as a rinse a second time. And the Gemara's explanation is that simply because for the second run, it's just simply not going to be as effective. It won't be effective at all.